Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Labor Day. We are the hardest working people in sports. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, apparently our whole lineup today is not joining us in our labors. But Stilly is willing to do an hour. Stilly going to do an hour today? Hour and a half?
Yeah.
What's up with an hour and a half? Hour and a half show, Stilly? That's not even enough time for you to, like,
you just get going on the hot takes an hour and a half.
Rank, go through all the advanced stats of backup quarterbacks in the league.
Go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our friend Corey Curtis from News 2, brought to you by Tennessee Men's Clinic. Corey, good morning. How are you?
Well, I mean, if I'm going to listen to Stillman for 90 minutes, I'll hear 90 minutes if they don't have a right tackle. I mean, he doesn't even have to do a show at that point.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's usually just his warm-up mark at that point. Yeah.
Maybe he can. Maybe it'll be a special 90-minute, really, really tell that story.
Yeah, we can really get into it.
What'd you have for lunch that day? You know, I mean, he can really flesh it out a little bit for us.
Good stuff. So, Corey, we've been breaking down the Titans-Bears matchup in Week 1. Obviously, lots of eyeballs going to be on Caleb Williams in this one, and we know that. What kind of an opportunity is this for Will Levis, in your mind, to maybe change the narrative a little bit out there? We've talked about him in terms of, clearly, when people are making predictions for the Titans, they don't think Will Levis is going to be very good. What about just the opportunity for Levis as things get rolling here in Week 1 against Chicago?
Well, I mean, there are going to be a lot of eyeballs there because everybody wants to see what Caleb Williams is going to do. So he is going to have a chance, to do something, and he's going to be in an offense that we believe is going to allow him to do it. Now, we do know that the coach wants him to take the easy throw. He wants him to check down. He wants him to move the chains and take those stabs, when they're absolutely there. But it's judging when they're there and when it's the right time to take them that's kind of a work in progress. But, I think, say he plays like he plays against the Saints, which was really effective. What's everybody going to say? Oh, he just checked down. So. Yeah. I mean, look, it's going to take some time for him because, like you said, minds are already made up that he's not good. And so it's going to take more than a game. Now, he can begin to change the narrative, but I don't think he can change the narrative in one day. Because if he could change the narrative in one day, he would have done it in Atlanta, against Atlanta, or he would have done it in Miami.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is, he did have – people could have watched him play good football last year. They could have watched him and noticed. And I understand it wasn't like all good. It wasn't all great. It was a terrible situation too. It does seem, Corey, we are broad brushing NFL media and everything, but we have Charles Robinson on here and he likes him. I mean, he's a national NFL. Like there are some people I see.
Pete Prisco likes him. Who notoriously hates the Titans? Yep. Pete Prisco.
There you go. I mean, Jamie Erdahl likes him.
Yeah,
we got some people in the NFL who are not everybody thinks he's trash.
A lot of people do,
but yeah, more do than don't, I suppose.
Yeah,
so
chip on the shoulder. 70-30. And he's got a lot to prove still. I mean, his completion percentage was under 60% last year. There's reasons that it was under 60%. He did not have a great receiving core. He did not have great protection, but he also took a lot of chances with the football. And, that's all part of the process is improving all of those things, improving his decision-making, where and when he goes with the football, improving his protection, and improving his weapons, which they've done all of those things. And I know it's preseason, but he was 11 of 13. Do I expect him to go 11 of 13 Sunday? No, I don't necessarily expect him to throw it at 80%, but I do expect him between to be around 65.
Corey, there's obviously a lot of storylines heading into the game. Where does the matchup of Adunze, Keenan Allen, and DJ Moore going up against L'Jarius Sneed, Awuzie, and McCreary rank for you?
Well, it's a really good matchup because those guys are really good players on both sides of the ball. The scary thing for the Titans is that you haven't seen them all out on the field together. I mean, they can talk all they want about how intense their walkthrough is. You know, there's nothing prepares you for playing football like playing football. And those guys haven't played football this summer or this fall. Does that mean I don't think they can be ready? No. I mean, they're professionals and they're veterans, so they know what to do. But we haven't seen it, and they haven't communicated at full speed, and that's what's a moment of trepidation for you. Does that mean they can't do it? No, but they've got to prove it. So it's going to be a good test. And how many times could we have in the last 20 years said Titans and Bears, and we're wondering about the passing game for both teams?
Yeah.
It's a fascinating change.
That is a good point. So Robbie had the question earlier about anticipation, you know, just in terms of, you know, just like Titans fans, some of the bigger openers that that you can recall in terms of all the changes. And I could also fold in the opponent and things like that too. And you're going up against supposedly this generational QB, which I know you probably believe he will be a generational QB. I know you hope he will be.
I believed he was a generational QB before the Bears drafted him.
That is true. And so, and you're far from alone. But what would you say about that in terms of just the anticipation level of this compared to recent years for the Titans?
I think that, obviously when you are very good, the year of the Titans were the number one seed, and then you come back the next year, anticipation is high for those years because you've had a taste of it. You think your team is good. You think that they're going to do well. You think they'll be right back where they were the year before, which, unless you've got Patrick Mahomes, never seems to be the case. But I've been here for 20 plus years, and with the change in the coaching staff, with the change in the playing style, with the massive changes, because we're not just talking about spending money on free agents. You know, now you're talking about trading for a lockdown corner, trading for a really good, middle linebacker, bringing in, receivers who can play. I mean, there's just a lot to be excited about, to see how it all comes together. You know, we made our predictions last night on Sports Extra, and I understand the Titans can win 3 or 4 games this year. I put them at 8 and 9, but I feel really uneducated about that 8 or 9 because when you look at the people they put on defense, they've got dudes at a lot of positions. I mean, their two tackles are dudes, with Simmons and Big Tavondre. And then, the two guys in the middle should be really good. And for the first time in forever, you have two corners where you don't say they're okay. He's better than what we had. No, these guys are good players. These guys have been really good players. And so there's a lot to be excited about. And if the Titans offensive line can play, I think they can win a bunch of games. I don't want to put a ceiling on it. I don't want to put a floor on it. And I think that's kind of what's exciting about the whole thing is there's so much mystery, but there's so much reason that if you actually follow this team to think that they're good. I continue to say, if the Dallas Cowboys had done what the Titans did this offseason, they would have been the talk of the league. Now, they're always the talk of the league anyway, but it would have been out of control.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Corey Curtis with us here on the program. Corey, switching gears to college football, what about that win for Vanderbilt to kick off the season? What did you make of the performance of Diego Pavia against Virginia Tech?
Look, I'm not going to say I wasn't surprised they won, because I was. But you know me. I know a little bit about Jerry Kill. And I had heard from some people that, Pavia was going to be the guy, and that Pavia is a guy with a lot of ability and a lot of confidence. And I think, injecting that confidence is big for this team, because they need somebody with that I don't give a crap attitude. We're gonna do it. You know, because like in the past, Vanderbilt blows a 17-0 lead, that game's over, right? And, you know, you think that guy's attitude has something to do with it. But, you know, look, you know, Clark Lee can coach defense. Jerry Kill can coach offense. Jerry Kill can also just coach. And I'm not saying, you know, Clark Lee doesn't deserve credit, but bringing in Jerry Kill is the biggest move they made. This is a guy who has won everywhere he's gone, and it's been at places that don't typically win. I mean, I was at Southern Illinois. We were terrible. He turned us into a winner instantly. I'm from Chicago. Northern Illinois has never been worth a darn, and he turned them into a huge winner. He goes to Minnesota, has health problems, and still wins games there. And then he takes New Mexico State to, what, 10 wins last year?
Yeah, 17-11 in 2 years out of nowhere.
I mean, it's ridiculous. So Vanderbilt winning and Jerry Kill being a big part of the equation is not two separate things, okay? That is two very huge things together. And Pavia also is a big part of that because you got to have a guy who can make plays taking the football, and we haven't seen a lot of that the last few years.
Okay, so speaking of generational quarterbacks, Corey, what'd you think of Nico? Did you watch Nico?
Nico's really good, right? I mean, Nico's really good. You know, the question that I have, you know, when you look at the Vols last year, this year, how much of it is the whole team is better and how much of it is just Nico? I mean, you know, he gets into that bowl game last year and he wins MVP, okay, his first start. And then he comes out this game, and I know we could say UT Chattanooga, you know, Ole Miss played Furman. You know, everybody plays whoever they play the first game. But we saw Joe Milton against Austin Peay last year, and I don't believe he threw for 100 yards, okay? So he could not take advantage of that level of competition. And Nico just looks confident, just looks accurate with everything. You know, he knows his weapons. He knows where theirs are. And I think, you know, the bigger thing is he gives him a chance to do something with the football when he gets it to him. You know, he's a heck of a talent and a heck of a player, and I think, you know, for 2 years he's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Corey, happy Labor Day. We've made it to week one of the NFL season. We appreciate so much you taking time to be with us this morning.
I'll tell you what, it was a really good weekend of college football on news, too.
I think it was.
That Notre Dame A&M game, and then last night's game was outstanding. What's
fantastic
the SC quarterback's name?
The USC?
Miller-Moss?
Miller-Moss, yeah.
Dude, that guy's a player.
He is. I mean, think Nussmeier's good, too.
Yeah, but I mean, Moss, stand in the pocket and deliver with the heat on him and throwing strikes. That guy's climbing up the draft board for me. That guy can play.
You got the Vols coming up on News 2 this weekend.
Yeah, we do. And the Vols and NC State Saturday night in prime time. That's a huge game. That's a huge game for both teams. And, you know, the SEC took a couple punches this weekend with Florida and LSU going down, so I think these non-conference games are going to get a little bigger.
And A&M.
Yeah, A&M too.
One and three.
Yeah, three losses. Oh, my gosh. Disband the league. Or either that or go start recruiting some new teams.
Clemson to the SEC.
Soon enough.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, they don't want them. They're terrible now.
Oh, wait. Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Corey. Appreciate you taking time to be with us.
All right, thanks, guys.
Corey Curtis from News 2 joins us every Monday morning at 8 o'clock here on the program. As he said, that's a big win for Vanderbilt on Saturday against Virginia Tech. We'll get a little bit more into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Appreciate Corey Curtis from News 2 for being with us in the last segment. Chase and Big Joe will be live today from 9 to 11 as well. And then get Stilly.
They're ready to work today.
They're ready to work. And Stilly for an hour and a half. I think we got a sounds game coming up. So
that's Stilly's excuse?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I guess I'll accept that.
I guess.
That better be a hell of a 90 minutes, Stilly.
No pressure.
More blabbing on this or that and going off on your little tangents. Yeah, you know, focus your discussion to my Mason Rudolph sucks.
That's right. Vanderbilt, huge win for them on Saturday to kick off the season against Virginia Tech. 34-27 in overtime. They jumped out to a 17-point lead in that one. Diego Pavia finishing 12 of 16 through the air for 190 yards and two touchdowns. Also, 26 carries, 104 yards on the ground. So almost 300 yards of total offense from him combining through the air and on the ground, three touchdowns. Big-time performance from him. And, you know, you said it earlier, that's the biggest win of the Clark Lea era. I think given the circumstances, I would probably have to agree. I'm here to listen to the argument of on the road at Kentucky over Will Levis or at home against Florida. But I think, you know, I said this earlier, it's been a long time since they've had something positive happen in that program. A long time. It's probably been since that Florida game is the last time they – I mean, even the wins last year, it was a struggle win, as they call it, against Hawaii. It wasn't a ton better for the first half of the game the next week, and then they lost 10 in a row after that. So it's been a lot of negativity in that program. A lot of people really – I don't know if concerned is the right word, but I guess intrigued to see how it was going to go this year under Clark Lea in year four. And for them to come out and play the way they did and get a win against what we think is a good Virginia Tech team, I guess we'll wait and see on that front. But that's a big moment for Vanderbilt and a big win for Clark Lea on Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, look, is it a little bit prisoner of the moment? Sure. And, like, maybe Virginia Tech ends up 5-7 and Vanderbilt ends up 3-9 still. And, okay. But at this moment, yeah, they needed something like that. And you could tell in their reactions. Corey Curtis talked last segment about the importance of bringing on Jerry Kill. It's interesting because the offensive coordinator of the Vanderbilt Commodores is Tim Beck, who is Jerry Kill's protege, who was the offensive coordinator for him at New Mexico State. But Jerry Kill had a headset on sideline too, on Saturday. So obviously he's not just here. His official title is like consultant and to the head coach and senior offensive advisor or something like that. But it's basically consultant to the head coach, right? He does a lot of stuff to try to take some stuff off Clark Lea's plate. But obviously, he's very much – he and Beck, this is their baby. This is their offense. And then Clark Lea has a defense that's kind of like one of those things, right? You're splitting the two sides of the ball. But there's a video, a great video of in particular, you know, Clark Lea and Jerry Kill and their reaction together after the win that made the rounds on social media yesterday kind of tells you how big this was. This was – especially because the 17-0 lead evaporates. You have a bust and you give up just a arm puntable touchdown to go behind with 4 minutes left. It's okay. Well,
it felt like same old Vandy.
You teased your fans again. Yeah. Congratulations. But instead, this kid, Diego Pavia, just chips him down the field. You know, misdirection, option stuff, option this way, it's a counter this way, now he's going RPO and he makes a little dish out to the receiver. I mean, it's fun to watch. And it was big time plays by him over and over again. So don't know what it means, you know, for this season, but they needed something, like you said. They needed something positive, and they're going to be fun to watch. It's like we've talked about the Titans' watchability. The watchability of Vanderbilt has improved tremendously. I'm confident in saying that. I'm not predicting a lot more wins this year, but I'm confident in saying that.
I thought Quincy Skinner had a really nice game for Vanderbilt, made some tough catches. And look, Pavia, I don't know that anybody's ever going to, you know, confuse him for, you know, Quinn Ewers standing back there or anything. But he was efficient with the ball on Saturday, 12 of 16. He didn't throw it a ton. I don't know that you're ever really going to see a game that goes well for Vanderbilt where he's throwing the ball 35 or 40 times. It's just not what his strength has been. And I do have concerns, like when you move into SEC play and your schedule is week in, week out SEC teams, like can you really run the quarterback 20 times in a game? Can you do that on a consistent basis in this league? I don't know. But I tell you what, it was fun to watch on Saturday. And I will say this, and I don't know how you put a tangible effect on this and how it plays out that way. But it just, to me anyway, it felt different watching them play Saturday. There was an attitude that I think Pavia brings that looked like it was rubbing off on his teammates. And I don't know what that's going to mean once they get into SEC play, but it looked like they were having fun out there. It looked like, I mean, he was just not going to let them lose at one point. And it was fun to watch. Like that was as fun to watch of a game from a Vanderbilt quarterback as we've seen in a while.
Yeah. And look, I mean, I think they're essentially, and they do a lot of different things, but they're an option team, so he's going to take those hits and he's going to carry. That's going to be a huge part of their offense. That's, you know, he's going to have to do that in the SEC, you know, to a pretty large extent. I don't think they're ever going to be – I don't you know, I don't want to put any, I don't want to like underrate this kid any more than he already obviously has been his whole entire life. But, you know, I don't think he's a drop back, throw it 30 times guy at any point, you know. And that's not – I know that word out of even scrimmages going the season was like the passing game was not efficient. You know, it looked a little rough. But you get him into a game, and when he really needed to make a pass, he made some passes in this game. But I think that's what it's going to be. It's going to be picking your spots, and it's going to be making defenses play assignment football and make mistakes. And they are better, I think, on both lines of scrimmage. I mean, I think that's one thing we saw. Virginia Tech is – a lot of people picking them to be maybe a dark horse playoff team. That probably gets thrown out the window now. But I think that's a 7-8 win team, and we'll see. But, like, they have pretty good talent, and Brent Pry's actually, I think, done a pretty good job. Some Virginia Tech fans I know may not agree with that and may want him immediately fired. But – Vanderbilt stood up on the lines of scrimmage better than I thought. I think the scheme is part of that offensively for sure, but the defensive line, you can see they've got some guys who have developed, and they've got some new guys who are helping them.
What did you think of game one of Clark Lea as the head coach defensive coordinator combo?
Yeah, I mean, it was it definitely looked better. And again, I think some of it is they are more stout up front. It's, you know, look, obviously he moved on from his coordinators, and so it wasn't perfect, and it could get better from them. You watch Vanderbilt last year, and it's just like if you are that beat up and overwhelmed at that many spots along the line of scrimmage, man, your scheme at some point, it's just really hard to smoke and mirrors your way out of that, you know. But obviously he's a great defensive coordinator. That's why he got this head coaching job. So this I'm the defense – you're the offense. Who cares who gets the credit? Let's try to win football games thing. For one day, seems to be working pretty well for them.
615-737-1025, our phone number. What did you make of Vanderbilt's win against Virginia Tech? Was that the biggest win of the Clark Lea era? We'll take your thoughts on that. We'll get into Tennessee's performance against Chattanooga. Look ahead to NC State as well. Coming up next, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.
What do you think of Diego Pavia?
The biggest compliment I can pay him, and I speak on behalf of the team when I say this, is when the ball is in his hands, you're never out of the fight. We say in this program, belief is a practice. And that means that your actions, no matter your circumstances, should reflect the deep belief you have that you're going to come out with a positive outcome. And Diego embodies that in everything he does. So whether it's the way he trains, whether it's, you know, the way he studies film, certainly the way he competes in practice, and obviously today we saw a warrior out on the field that was going to put the game on his back. And
that's Clark Lea after the game on Saturday discussing his quarterback, Diego Pavia. Taking your thoughts on Vanderbilt's big win against Virginia Tech and all things college football, 615-737-1025. Liam on the text line says, maybe it's my almost 30 years of heartbreak with this team, but what an amazing win. Coming back to win after giving up the lead is just not what we do. I don't know how long Pavia will last, but this sliver of hope is refreshing. Feels like a while since I've been looking forward to watching more games. We talked about that, you know, we had a caller earlier talk about the attendance of the game Saturday. It was a lot of Virginia Tech fans, not a lot of Vanderbilt fans. Look at their home schedule. I mean, look, there's going to be a lot of Texas fans here. There's going to be a lot of Alabama fans here. We know there's going to be a lot of Tennessee fans at that game. So I don't know how much different it's going to look throughout the year just in terms of not having a ton of your opposing fan base in the stadium. But that's got to be a big moment for Vanderbilt fans who've suffered through a lot the last couple of years to get that win on Saturday and to create some excitement in the program. Like, Diego Pavia, it's one game, so I'm not going to sit here and just totally overreact to it. But his demeanor, like, that's the type of guy as a fan base that you rally around. Like, that type of moxie that he puts out there. And, again, we'll see what it looks like once they get into SEC play and if he can sustain, like, the level of quarterback play that we saw Saturday. But if he can and he's close to it, like, that's the type of guy Vanderbilt football needs, is to be able to rally around a dude that's got a little bit of swag to him, like Pavia has.
No question. And look, I mean, I hear what Liam's saying, and I mean, there's a lot of that kind of sentiment from Vanderbilt parents right now. Like, it's just like, man, finally, like, something positive and fun, you know? So on the attendance issue, as we discussed earlier, look, it's hard. You know, you got a Virginia Tech, that's a huge fan base. That is a team that came with some expectations, and you get to go to Nashville. So they all came. Some of them went to their truck at halftime and gave up, okay? But they came in droves. And Bama, they're going to come. Texas, they're going to show up. You know what? I'd like to see Vanderbilt fans take advantage of what are probably like $5 tickets and have a nice crowd for Alcorn State on Saturday night. You know, like after watching that team, if you're a Vanderbilt fan and you're kind of like, yeah, I'm not sure about this. After seeing what they did, do you not want to see Diego Pavia and these guys beat up on somebody and like keep it going? I mean, for like what I would assume would be very reasonable prices if you're, well, I mean, go box office or secondary market, whatever. Like that, there's an example of where we could see maybe some progress, some reaction to this. I mean, we've talked more about Vanderbilt football today than we have on a show and how
a long time.
Yeah. So it's all, you know, show some signs of life, and I think you'll probably see some reaction to it.
Well, that's the thing. And look, you know, Clark Lee hit some comments after the game about the stands and about how they need to create a home field advantage, and it was not that today. And I saw some Vanderbilt fans on Twitter. I don't know if upset is the right word, but they were basically like, yeah, man, I get what you're saying, but you've given us zero reason to be excited the last 2 years, so it's going to take some time. So I understand that. And I kind of had a similar reaction. I was like, yeah, well, this is a great moment, but there's not been a ton to cheer for Vanderbilt over the last couple of years. So I don't know if I necessarily blame the fans. But like I think what you said about the Alcorn State, the matchup's not a sexy one. But you just watched your team have arguably the biggest win of the era under Clark Lee. Go and watch them play Saturday. Like, I think it would be really nice to see a good Vanderbilt crowd in the Alcorn State game, even if the matchup is not a great one on paper.
Just like you just said, you were telling the story during a break about watching the Vols, and it's 55-3, and Heather's like, can we do something? No! I'm watching every last second of my team, right? Right. How many – I mean, Vanderbilt fans, you get 12 opportunities to watch these guys play.
Right.
And that's still more than likely that's it. Maybe it won't be it.
Maybe it'll be 13.
But, yeah, very limited opportunities. You know, and these games, fans rightfully complain about some of these matchups. But, I mean, you know, I think for Vanderbilt, like, you don't have that many opportunities to blow someone out. And also you get to see maybe the next quarterback, the backup play, and things like that. I'm selling this game hard for you, okay? But again, it's like the opportunities are very limited.
Yep. On the Vols front, they waxed Chattanooga 69-3. I mean, that's not necessarily unexpected. Now, the thing is they kind of did call off the dogs. It was 45-0 at the half. And I said this in the middle of the game. Had they left the starters in, I think they probably legitimately could have scored 90 points in that game. Like, everything was going well offensively. It's Chattanooga. What do you really take away from it? I don't know. One thing I do take away from it, and again, that you know, the level of competition is about to go up dramatically against NC State. The pocket is not going to be as clean as it was in this game, although he did have to make some plays outside of the pocket a few times. But Nico consistently was putting the ball right on the money where it was supposed to be. You know, he had a great throw to Thornton over the middle for the touchdown. That was just – it was an absolute frozen rope. Got a great throw on the outside to Thornton, too. Put a great ball to Holden Stays over the middle. Great ball to Brazel. Like, he was throwing the ball on a rope on Saturday. And it was consistently accurate over and over again. You know, Aaron Murray's come out with something on Twitter breaking down the film. He's getting a lot of love right now around the country just with the way that he played. And I realize it was Chattanooga. But just from the eyeball test, Joe, it looked a little bit different watching – Nico Iamaleava played quarterback on Saturday than it did last year.
Yes. Now, you put him out there against air, which is not far from what this was, and you're still kind of, you know, eyeballs emoji at some of the throws he made for sure. The Aaron Murray thing was interesting. I will say one thing, you know, one throw he broke down was like how it was kind of a risky throw. The linebackers really had depth on their drops, and he still – zipped it in there behind them. You know, a throw like that, like, does he get Does he pay for some a throw yeah. like that against a better team, against a real, you know, a team with better athletes and a real defense? I mean, we'll see. He was very.
He's going to throw some interceptions this year.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, he was very careful in the Iowa game. Played well, but it wasn't anything like wow. But that was obviously the game plan, right? Like their offense stinks, and we don't want Nico. We give just keep it nice and simple and all that, and it was good. This guy we saw Saturday was full, okay, here, you run the offense. Here's the offense. Go do your thing, which I think is definitely way more exciting than not. But, yeah, there may be some mistakes here and there. You know, well, play the best teams on the schedule.
I'm not saying that he's going to be an interception machine because he's not. But, like, this idea that he's just going to be perfect all year is not – there are going to be some either games or moments where he struggles. So, I mean, he still is a first-time starting quarterback at the college level. So is the hype getting a little out of control? Maybe. But I think you could see it. It's not like it's some revelation. He's a five-star quarterback for the reason. He's the guy that they zeroed in on from the jump in that quarterback class. And the talent is undeniable. Like he's got a ton of ability. Now, what's that going to look like against NC State? What's it going to look like against Georgia and Alabama and some of the big games they've got on the schedule this year? Oklahoma on the road? Like I don't know. But I think if you're a Tennessee fan, it's off to an encouraging start. And I mentioned the NC State game. I looked Saturday morning. They were a 4.5-point favorite against NC State. As of this morning, they're up to 7.5 already. So as a combination of Nico playing well, NC State struggling on Thursday night, and then the hype kind of
being
what
fans.
It is. And Vols fans.
All right, like absolutely. It was in their minds.
Yeah, that's what it is. So, look, it's going to be it's a fascinating game. It's obviously, you know, I know NC State struggled against Western Carolina, but it's clearly
that's good for them now.
It's clearly a big jump in competition. Everybody's going to be picking Tennessee to roll in this game. So how does Tennessee handle that as the favorite? That's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, no, for sure. Again, psychologically, just like I like the Titans psychologically, it's not ideal just in terms of you looked amazing, they looked crappy, everybody's going to pick you to blow them out. And they're still a solid football team. I mean, that's a pretty good football team. And they've got some guys on offense. The Vols are going to play some D in this game. So, but the Nico, I mean, we've talked about some of these other five-star quarterbacks out there. Connor Wegman is five-star quarterback. Doesn't look like it. I mean, Clemson has back-to-back five-star quarterbacks that have just been underwhelming. It doesn't guarantee anything. And I want to see him do it in a game like this, right? You know, he's still holding back a little bit.
Yeah.
But, man, he looks good.
But, I mean, the eye test is what it is. Like, sometimes you watch a guy throw a football and you just say, yeah, that looks a little bit different. And that's what it looks like with Nico. It just looks a little bit different when he's throwing the ball.
And even a couple of the plays Saturday, and we've talked about this before with him, but his escapability and everything, yeah. I mean, he's going to make some big plays with his feet this year.
I mean, the first play of the game, he got pressured up the middle, rolled out to the right, and threw an absolute dart on the sideline on the run. I think it was Thornton on that play. I mean, and that's the other takeaway from this too. Like they moved halfway through the year last year, they moved Thornton from the inside to the outside, and clearly he's more comfortable on the outside. And he's he had 3 catches for 104 yards, 2 touchdowns. So those 4, Squirrel White, Brew McCoy, it was good to see back on the field the other day after the gruesome injury last year, Thornton and Brazel. That's going to be their main 4. And how do those guys gel together, and what does the playing time breakdown kind of look like as the season goes on? But Thornton, that's a big game for him. I mean, he did more in that game than he did all of last year, basically, for Tennessee.
And this is another possibility of major overreaction, but that's the first thing I thought of was Jalin Hyatt, total 0 in his first year in this offense with a lot of other stuff happening with him and just getting his stuff together. And then, of course, we saw what happened. He wins the Biletnikoff in his second year. I'm not saying that for Thornton, but this is a guy who I think absolutely – I mean, I thought so coming in. You watch him in Oregon. This is a guy who can really cause problems for you downfield if you're a defense with those choice routes.
Yep.
And so I think there's going to be a steady diet of that. And if you have that guy, which they didn't have last year, there's a lot that last year – I think they could be better this year, certainly more at quarterback than any other place, but that's another big one if that's how it turns out.
More reaction from week 1 of college football. Lots of interesting games over the weekend, and one more coming up tonight as Florida State takes on Boston College. We'll get into all that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Taking your thoughts on an exciting week one of college football. We've discussed Vandy's big win against Virginia Tech. Tennessee handles business against Chattanooga. Got a big one coming up this weekend against NC State. Some things not going well for some other teams out there. In the SEC, Florida loses to Miami, and loses is probably too kind a word. They got dominated by Miami. Texas A&M goes down to Notre Dame at home. And then last night, USC takes down LSU at the neutral site game in Vegas. So the
Big
SEC,
Ten football, baby. Big Ten football. Making a statement.
He's making a statement. The ACC and whatever you want to call Notre Dame. They're like halfway an ACC team, but not really. Yeah. SEC, it's not meaning more right now.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because and I saw Danny Cannell was like, ESPN will never say this, but they were 1-3, you know.
Speaking
and that is true.
Takes.
I would also say, let's see, LSU, A&M, Florida. So who? What are the – if we did power rankings of the SEC, I'm going to go Georgia for sure. I mean, they're going to be the best. And by the way, yeah, they kind of made up a little bit for that by punking Clemson to that extent.
Yes.
I'm going to go Alabama.
Texas.
I'm going to go Texas.
Ole Miss.
And then I'm going Ole Miss and Tennessee in some order. Those are the top five teams in the – SEC. And by the way, Texas at Michigan this week, that'll be a chance to make a statement. But those five teams, just only one of them played someone good. The other four played, you know, warm-up games. So I wouldn't overreact to this. Texas A&M is going to be okay, but it was a rough side of the quarterback. LSU, I feel better about LSU than I did going into the season. Because I like Garrett Nussmeier.
Yep.
They've got another star receiver coming, and they've got good talent on D. They are better on D. They looked like they had a clue on D. Harold Perkins looks like a draft pick, whereas last year, like, Harold, go cover someone and do weird stuff, and let's not tackle anybody ever, and let's totally ruin a Heisman season by playing terrible defense. They're going to be okay. It doesn't mean LSU fans will be happy. Like you said,
it could be a little interesting.
Yeah, the expectations there are always high, but you know there. But I did not have them in that top five anyway. And then of course, who was the other one?
Well, Drinkwitz in Missouri he's going to get mad at you because you didn't put him in the top five, but it's okay.
Yeah,
they did win 51.
I don't think I do though. I think I've got them six.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think all
in Florida.
I think Ole Miss, Tennessee, Missouri are all kind of close together.
I agree.
Oklahoma, you could put in the mix there too.
So that's
it's a
super seven.
I said this to one of my friends that's a big SEC hater. We were texting. He was like, "Oh, look at the mighty SEC with Texas A&M going down." I was like, "I mean, congrats to Notre Dame for beating like the 10th best SEC team."
Yeah,
it's awesome,
right? And congrats to Miami, who I think is going to be really good because Cam Ward's awesome. Yeah. But they beat the 12th best team,
maybe
in Florida.
Yeah.
So let's calm it down. But I will say that we see again good, hard, strong Midwestern football. The Big Ten can still beat the SEC speed at times.
Yeah,
congrats, USC.
We did see that. Hard-nosed football. It is hilarious that they joined the Big Ten and their defense just immediately got better. It's like,
yeah, maybe that's it.
Maybe that's what it is.
Just even being in the same league as Iowa.
Just that.
All of a sudden you.
Just defense galore.
You learn how to tackle.
Billy Napier in Florida. You know, we brought it up earlier. They get beat 41-17 in a game that was just a total gong show from the start. Miami dominated, looked really good. It's already loud on Billy Napier. You know, it was pretty funny watching the video after the game of him trying to open the water bottle and couldn't open the water bottle.
Oh, my God!
A lot of fodder from Gators fans on that. This guy can't even open his water bottle. He's the coach of the football team. But, yeah, I mean, we've gone through the schedule. They get absolutely embarrassed by Miami at home. The kind of seven-game run that has got to be one of the toughest stretches in the history of college football, it begins on October 12th when they go to Knoxville and they take on Tennessee. My big question is, what's their record going to look like before that? and how much noise is going to be on Billy Napier once they get there. You know, they've got Samford coming up this weekend, which they should handle. If you don't handle that one, then we got a whole different list of problems.
Well, then yeah.
Texas A&M's on that list, which is going to be an interesting game. UCF, which they should beat, but is not a gimme, is going to be an interesting game as well. And they got Mississippi State under Jeff Lebby his first year. So they could be 4-1 heading into that stretch. They could be 2-3. I have no idea what they're going to look like, but a very bad start for the Gators to the season.
Very bad. I see a pathway for Billy Napier to keep his job, and it is. It's winning all those games that you need to win. And I honestly think that he could keep his job at 5-7 this year because the schedule is what it is. It's his third year. I mean, I don't want to sit here and make excuses for the guy because he went, what, 11-14 his first 2 years? But it is his third year. And Scott Strickland said this to, I think it was Feinbaum, right?
Yes.
He said, quote, "I really believe Billy Napier is going to be the head coach of Florida for a long, long time." I just don't know.
I think you're putting more into that than I am. But I kind of roll my eyes at that.
But why are you saying it that way if you think I might have to fire this guy this year? Like you,
recruiting.
But you don't have to say it like that. You can just say, "We believe in Billy Napier. Hey, that's our coach, and we believe in him, and let's go win a game." You know what I mean? Like, why are you saying a long, long time if you think you might fire him this year?
I do think, though, in college football, sometimes there reaches a point of no return with your fan base, and they're getting dangerously close to that.
Well, there could be. Yeah. So, like, if they lose one of these crappy games or if they get just their doors blown off over and over again, then, yes, it's – well, look, at some point – the bottom line is that even more than ever now, because of the collectives, people are like, "Nope, my check's not coming to you." And so that can happen. But I also feel like if you're an AD and you say that your plan is not to fire him. Yeah. Your plan is not the same as the fans right now.
Yeah. And how quickly does that change? One thing I did notice, some nice restraint for the most part from Vol Twitter over the weekend. Did not laugh at Florida that much. I think they are waiting.
Smart.
Until October the 12th.
Oh, yeah.
They're waiting.
If they win on, like, a Hail Mary that gets it bounced around by a million people and then, like, you know, Squirrel White catches it in the back of the end zone to avoid being shocked, then it will be an absolute open season on the embarrassment of the game. Like, it's all being held till then, you know?
They've seen this story too many times before. They're not – they're holding back.
No, that's smart, Vol Twitter. Yep. I see you.
We see it. Fun show today. Really appreciate everybody participating. Yeah. Hope everybody has a great rest of their Labor Day. Chasing Big Joe is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No